I want you to please, as we talk about the Freeman circumstances, everyone is following that along very closely. There are some good things, some bad things. Any time that you have managed to bring something to a conclusion without a bloody showdown on the field, you have made some progress. It'll be maybe never that you learn everything there was to learn about that circumstance. And it doesn't matter, because you can either take a stand for something, you can pick up a gun and you can try to take or do or prohibit something through force, and that does not save anything. And at least we have a stabilization, and now the focus will begin to disperse a little bit. You're going to find that everything that the justice people and Schweitzer were doing is absolutely, unequivocally constitutional. They just were in competition with the Federal Reserve. You see, they were doing, or his theory was to do exactly what the Federal Reserve did, only the Federal Reserve garners billions and billions and trillions of dollars in interest. And Schweitzer was going to loan his funds, his capital, without interest. So they don't want that kind of competition. And, of course, if you let one get away with it, my goodness, all you citizens will try it. But the fact is that they couldn't find anything unlawful about it. And they will talk about writing bogus checks and so forth. They're talking about the ones to the stores and as payments for various and sundry things. You're going to find that what he was originally charged with is going to hold no water at all. And as a matter of fact, some of those first instruments that he handled were cashed. So it's going to be harder and harder to smash that. So the only way they can handle it is to buy a little time and stamp it out and make it silent. So it'll be interesting how that unfolds. And yet, consistently, people continue to say, even after it's been explained what he was doing, how he was doing it, etc., the questions continue to flood. What exactly was he doing? How did he do it? What makes it legal? What makes it undoable? And so forth. So we're going to try it again today. So if you'll go ahead, I just want you to pay particular attention to how actually simple it is and why it's legal.
Okay, this is a writing from Hatton, Saturday, June 15th, 1996. Where do we turn for help? If you are faced in the right direction, there are no turns to be made. I feel it is time to remind you that name-calling or accusations do not a correct statement make. Moreover, lots of name-calling only shows more of the ignorance of the uninformed, and all people individual have a right to be uninformed if they so choose. That does not mean that the rest of us capitulate to their ignorance or false venom spewing. When another lawsuit filing comes from the opposition, we will counter it, no more and no less. Further, when lies are thrust out against us, we will counter them with truth, no more and no less. You who make excuses to cover the ill-intentioned deeds that you do will face the consequences, no more and no less. All the excuses for wrong choices will not make the wrong right. One of the more recent blasts from opposition is that, quote, if you put money in one of those institutions called banks, you can get it out, unquote, or words similar. Oh, and how many of you have tried to get your funds out of a receivered savings and loan, or tried to hold your property after it goes into receivership? You cannot be selective with your personal vendettas to suit just your wishes. Responsibility is that which falls to the honest people, for all involved, not just the one who chooses to toss briquettes. Further, how angry are you when you find that the insiders have gathered the money and left you who had placed your funds? George Green did not offer to pay anybody in the Institute ever, not in the judges' chambers nor anywhere. When caught with gold, he has conjured at least two dozen different stories, And this payback is only one of the more recent. Check it out. When the CLC tried to make a solution to the stolen gold, Mr. Green hung up the phone on Mr. Dixon. If that is your idea of working out a settlement, then you are going to go through life with no settlements. Perhaps the more interesting observation of themselves about themselves is that they are now beginning to call themselves dark energies and cannot stand in the light. Interesting. We have no more time for this never-ending harangue. I am asked to repeat some information on commercial liens, which we have presented from Hartford Van Dyke and Eustace Mullins. I dislike having to retype something which has so recently been run in the papers, but with the arrest of the Montana Freeman, it does need repeating. The shadow government who runs the world order can't afford to allow such as those patriots to start their own government, for they go back to the basis of freedom, which is so far removed from acceptable as to be a horrendous problem to the powers that be. Everything so far that the freemen have done is totally lawful and constitutionally correct. Their crime is in making it work. Their banking and checking system is identical to the Federal Reserve, which is also a private enterprise. At least the freemen placed theirs under a free state. I have no argument one way or another, for, of course, it is wrong to pull in international troops to trap citizens. But those who knew what was going on told everyone they could that it would be this way. Eustace Mullins, for instance, has spelled it out for you at the peril of his own life over and over and over again. We simply write of those who steal and damage us, and we are bashed for taking note and not being unconditional with love for our own murders. Rick, Dharma, and EJ have now been threatened with death by people in opposition to whatever they perceive or have decided is their position. Oh, indeed, this week. There is no way to make people understand or even listen if they choose not to do so. How dare anyone blame another for their own bad choices? Nothing is accomplished by magic or through lies except very bad societies and governments. All the undercover prattlings and huddling in the world will not change an iota of the truth of it. By the way, to you who are using the recently acquired attorney-privileged writings for your new assault, you may well find it was not such a good idea. You have now betrayed the very one who betrayed us to get those writings to you, and don't you think that it was suspicion you would do such a thing? When you pretend to be a friend while doing your dirty little deeds, it always catches up with you because it seems such players can't seem to keep their own mouth shut about their clever antics. It matters not one bit what you think I am or who I am. Life has a set of moral values which were twisted to gain advantage over others trying to simply do their jobs. And your now changing your harangue will not make the wrong right. One of the opposition now blasts Rick for not telling Eckers about the gold that he now says he has helped move for George Green. So, why didn't you tell EJ about it, Leon? Moreover, why didn't you just ask George to pay you off? George is the one who outright borrowed money from the Institute. If he alone had paid back his note and not taken the gold coins belonging to the Institute, the funds would have been available for lots of wondrous things. Is it not strange that logic only works in observing someone else's behavior? And then to just sit and say, "I'm so confused," is silly. Go find out the truth, and it won't be from the ones telling you the lies in the first place. But I will tell you this, friends. When you say that Paul L. said F something or other God, you err. You err really big. So again, let us speak of the methodology of the Freeman theory, and rightfully so, of money and debts, liens and loans. The idea is perfectly correct. It simply can't work within your own nation, for you are not free. Now, this is quoting from Discovering the Commercial Lien by Hartford Van Dyke. Hatton's comment. Also, please refer to prior writings regarding this subject by Mr. Van Dyke and Eustace Mullins recently shared. Now quoting from Hartford Van Dyke. All debts are satisfied by one or both of two things, a payment or a promise to pay. Every payment is by substance, and every promise to pay is accomplished by a currency or paper, which is technically known as a commercial lien. The satisfaction of the debt by providing substance is called paying the debt. The satisfaction of the debt by a written or printed promise to pay the debt is called discharging the debt. All debts are paid by substance. All debts are only discharged by currency, pocket money notes, or other commercial liens. The symbol of energy in a social system is called money. Money is of two kinds, either substance money or paper money. Substance money includes real property, land, precious metals, gold, silver, copper, etc., gems, and other things of real and lasting value. Paper money consists of notes which declare a debt or obligation and which promise or demand payment. All such evidences of debt or obligation are technically known as commercial liens. Such notes include currency, for example, Federal Reserve notes, checks, drafts, conditional checks, notes of exchange, paper money between banks, etc. Each and every form of paper money is a commercial lien. A Federal Reserve note is a commercial lien in the Federal Reserve Bank. A personal check is a commercial lien in the bank account of the maker of the check. A draft is a check with a conditional agreement printed above the place of endorsement on the back side of the draft. A note of exchange is a commercial lien between banks consisting of one bank demanding payment from another bank. A personal check, while passing between banks, is a note of exchange. Even a cash register receipt used to obtain a refund from a store for defective merchandise, signed and handed to the cashier as proof of purchase, is a commercial lien on that store and as such is and can be used as a medium of exchange or money by the store to obtain a refund or more product from the manufacturer. Bank accounts are backed or supported either by substance money or by paper money or by both. The substance money is called collateral. The paper money can be currency, for example, paper money notes, a loan of credit from the bank, or checks or other paper money such as commercial liens received from other sources. A debt which is satisfied by substance money is said to be paid. A debt which is satisfied by paper money is said to be discharged. Most debts in the United States of America are satisfied by the use of currency, checks, or other paper representative of value, meaning a debt to be paid. In other words, are satisfied generally by commercial liens. Hence, most debts in the United States are not paid, they are only discharged.
And by the way, if Ecker Phoenix wanted to take this literally and do it properly and according to the law, they could just discharge all of the debts of the Phoenix Institute with a piece of paper, or many pieces of paper. So let's be careful how really rotten we get to the ones who do hold the pen in hand. Go on, please. This is, by the way, one of the most succinct explanations of your monetary system that you will ever find. I would suggest you save it out. Because when the kids ask, well, what are they talking about, Daddy? What do they mean, money versus a discharge of a debt? Or a payment. What do they mean that there's a difference? It's all right here. This is the system.
A valid currency can be established by making a valid claim of debt by an affidavit in the form of a commercial lien and by allowing that lien to mature in 3 months or 90 days. Hatton's comment. Here is where you can relate to the Freeman in Justice Montana. They needed to allow the next series of liens to mature before being arrested and incarcerated. They have valid funds now to go about confronting the law, which is set to commence shortly.
See, they had to wait 90 days, so they were able to keep this thing stretched out long enough that they have validified their liens.
By allowing that lien to mature in 3 months or 90 days into an accounts receivable by the failure of the lien debtor to contest the lien, and if affidavit by a counter affidavit, a lien must contain, number one, the names of the parties, claimants, and debtors. Two, as affidavit stating the events which created the obligation. And three, a ledger giving a one-to-one correspondence between events and their values. Four, a list of property pledged or claimed to secure the payment of the obligation. And five, any evidence or exhibits in support of the claims made against the debtor. The primary method of establishing a commercial lien, currency, paper, money, is to combine, number one, a promise to perform, number two, a claim of a breach of that promise, and number three, a 3-month, 90-day default to challenge or rebut the claim of breach of contract. Commercial lien currency can take the form of a bank check, a draft, or some other mode of commercial lien assignment. Montana, regarding Leroy Schweitzer. Leroy Schweitzer has, according to one of his students, researched the law to understand money and to understand how the law authorizes any knowledgeable individual to obtain financing through the comptroller of the currency of the United States of America using matured commercial liens. The universal method which he discovered by his studies naturally creates a money system which could harmoniously operate side by side with that of the Federal Reserve System and the United States government. However, Mr. Schweitzer is willing to operate his system without charging interest for the use of his capital, whereas the Federal Reserve System does not charge interest, does charge interest for the use of its capital and does not want to lose that interest through competition with Mr. Schweitzer. Hence the attacks on Mr. Schweitzer and his students by the Federal Reserve Corporation and by the U.S. government, which protects the Federal Reserve Corporation. Hatton's comment. The IRS is but a collection agency for the Federal Reserve Corporation, and the FBI is but a police arm of that same banking complex. Back to the document. Mr. Schweitzer's application of the law works. End of quoting from Mr. Van Dyke. Back to Hatton's writing. I would suggest that you people, citizens, look at the quarrels going on right now over Social Security and trust funds, etc. The U.S. government spends, or that is, borrows, all the extra funds from the Social Security fund over the amount it actually pays out to recipients. There is no money in trust, and if you stopped using the money in that fund as government dues, you would have a collapsed government. By the year 2026, I believe is the estimate, there will be no Social Security, period. Medicare has likewise been used up and is right now out of money. With government debts into the trillions of dollars, there is not enough real money in the world to pay such debts. Computer transfers are okay, readers. That is simply another way to scare you pantsless. If you want to build a house and you have computer money in a holding place, you can use against the value. The Federal Reserve notes have been worthless for so long as to stagger the thinking mind. Gold, at the least, has some modicum of value, even if artificial. But those paper notes mean nothing more than a debit card in a slot machine. What do I suggest you do? I don't longer suggest, for I weary of being called a black energy when I simply respond to your inquiries about your predicaments in a world gone nuts. You can do whatever you wish as long as the government allows you to wish. By the way, for you who continue to believe that Jason Brent and George Green have no connections, Rick Martin just got back some legal interrogatories wherein, when questioned about Jason Brent, Green answered, attorney-client privilege. So be it. This is the same Jason Brent who says regarding depopulation, quote, the old, the infirm, and the stupid will have to be dispatched, end quote. I still find myself wondering what that has to do with an auctioneer's non-sale of a property 8 years ago before any of these players even knew each other. Well, perhaps it has to do with politics. Since Ivan Boesky was running, basically, the business and associates of Santa Barbara Savings and Loan Association and planned at one point to buy out its mother, Financial Corporation of Santa Barbara. Oh, it just involves one notable personality after another. A century-old corporation doing good business bit the dust from the junk bonds and criminal parties who took over the institution. When you have members who establish a corporation, sit on the board, and are officers, and then use the corporation for their personal benefit, gain, and insider embezzlement, you have problems. Eckers have been accused of using millions of dollars personally, but the facts are that the two most important parties in founding and then acting as president, George Green and Rod Enns, used the corporation, the institute, and their own corporations to hoodwink the IRS and other legal entities. I did not say lawful, I said legal. They used the corporations, one founded and the other became president and then utilized, for their own criminal actions. Is it not then next the responsibility of the ones left to attend the cleanup of the rat's nest? What Green and Entz did is simply against the law, readers, and the ones left holding the snipe bag will either fold or continue the struggle to protect whatever is remaining. We continue to the very best of our ability, and I believe shortly we shall see that that was a wise and worthy continuation of integrity. Rick, son, you have worked endlessly and constantly at your task and responsibilities in all aspects of this journey, and you must recognize that this last assault as what it is, threats and an act of total intimidation to cover their own dirty tricks and dark purposes. It reminds me of those who burn their own houses and then complain about the rain on their heads, or those who put out the lights and then complain about the darkness. Nobody has lost anything except that which is poured into litigation while the attorneys continue to plan their retirement. George Abbott told a whole room full of people what he planned to retire on Fort's case, and if that doesn't say it all, who can do better? Abbott further refused to allow Fort to be dropped from the case over which all argue and harangue, and a judge had to force him to allow removal of Fort. It is past time that Mr. Fort looked closely at facts. For you who continue to bash the Institute for its continual use of legal counsel for defense, you had better reread your laws. A corporation has to have an attorney by law in all litigation. Your attorneys continue to enter harassment suits and motions while taking your money, and the courts put them down. But still, they enter more and more and more, requiring response by attorneys. And then to say that Stephen Horn is simply protecting his clients from the horrible corruption of Eckers 8 years ago, before they knew any of these players, shows your total lack of morality or knowledge. I have had inquiries about more news, less news, etc. Our writers are doing what they can in the space allowed. I sincerely hope that this writing allows my people who are currently under such pressure to realize its importance. Good morning. I salute you who continue in the face of adversity, for that persistence is going to bring its rightful reward.
Zita's missing today. Is she all right?
She's in Mexico with Phyllis.
I guess she's all right.
Yeehaw.
That answers then where Phyllis is.
That's right.
You want to hear the Father's Day message?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is the writing from today, June 16th. What an interesting concept, Father's Day. Perhaps a better title would be Cell Physiology and Biochemistry. However, we all know, don't we, that this is a tender reverence to our fathers who gave life to our fragile beings and further gives us someone to blame for our own shortcomings. We are what we are, and no amount of fathering will make us anything else, good or bad. I, too, am limited as to that which I can do or even offer to my own lineage genealogy. It becomes more and more obvious, however, that no amount of conjured or real genealogy we study means very little if we blunder through our living experiences. We in our own family of human expression are to a time in involvement, in evolvement, whereat we must move into recognition of our own ancestry in order to move on within the realms of that which lies beyond the moment. All in the beyond, in anticipation, is now having to come into focus, for the brethren of the cosmos are having to make their status realized, because evolution has brought you to here, and here is in the now, as always, and can only be measured by the knowing. You can't destroy anything. You can only change its recognition and structure. You can change all the properties of anything, but all you have done is change the physical properties, which will re-manifest in some form or another, or remain in the atomic molecular density of its own energy. Moreover, as we move along, it will be noted that through the years of total programming by limitation and allowances for that which bodes ill for mankind, you are trapped in a sequence of events over which you as individuals have little control. The mind is a wondrous thing which reaches beyond all living physical forms and begets all things. This is a massive concept, but is the concept which offers freedom or enslavement. You cannot change your world until you change your mind. You cannot either change your world until you change yourself. This, again, means changing your mind. Moreover, you have to want to change or you shall not do so. Your enemy does not understand what you do not understand, and you cannot understand what it is that he doesn't understand. Until you are willing to look and search out truth, the lies will continue to consume, confound, and confuse you. Until you are willing to give up opinionation in favor of learning facts, you cannot give up or change for the better anything. You can toss insults, blame, and all manners of warring techniques against that other, but you will never come to correct conclusions unless you look at self and garner facts and give up the repeated lies of the liars. To get facts, you go to records, documents, and look at what is and not what you are told by the false bearers. If your intent is misunderstood, then I suggest you look at whereat you may well not be making your point as presented, but rather are caught up in your own program of need and deceit. You continue to listen to the false speakers, serve the very ones doing you in, and hate because you cannot accept your own responsibility for your own plight. And it is wise indeed to know what your barrister is doing in your behalf, for you may well be shocked at that which he takes from you in your name while you are not understanding his papers and actions. When a paper is filed by an attorney against a corporation, friends, it requires by law an answer. As long as attorneys keep filing papers, the battle continues until you can get to the personal confrontation, which after years of litigation requires personal legal cause for meeting and conferring. If you don't know this, then why do you continue to take the word of the very ones hiding truth of it from you? We have no time for this. To base your battle on love when you practice hate is quite acceptable, but it is not lost on the recipients. If you call a man a turnip, then how do you expect to extract blood from him? After your attorneys have leached the blood from whatever there is left of that turnip and yourself, how expect you to gain? There are laws that govern the operation and responsibility of corporations, and whether or not you like it, it is required that the responsibility be met. If you have botched your own, why blame the ones who have not? I am going to put into writing here a couple of repeated things. The Institute entered into an agreement with the attorney of Leon Fort to return in increments the full amount of any participation his corporation may have involved itself. $40,000 was paid, and Leon's attorney took the funds. It is now stated that those funds are lost to the case. Leon said himself that they planned to get as much as they could until the Institute realized there was no agreement signed. Ha ha ha. There was in the agreement a payback of some $10,000 per month, which would by now have paid every cent in discussion twice over. The agreement in the original instance was to not call a note until the price of gold doubled from loan date. Leon broke his agreement. Betty Tootin the same. She was offered a payback plan and refused to even consider it. She too broke her own signed agreements. In addition, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter, she went to the corporation agent and took three corporations' books, literally and physically. The responsible parties are required by law to attend such actions, whoever is to blame. The intent, as laid forth by Green, Abbott, and Horton, along with all involved parties, is to use those stocks to destroy the Institute. No, thank you. Other participants object. How many savings and loans did you see come out of receivership and liquidation, Green's words, whole, and parties involved gaining anything? You might well go back and watch the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Neither Eckers nor the Institute took any money from little 90-year-old women and orphans, as it would be presented. And you who might have done such a thing, how can you expect to get anything in return for your destruction of the very entity you blame? The cost of required litigation is immense. I suggest you, who stand against us, realize that your own attorney said in front of many witnesses in great glee, I am going to retire on this Leon's case. And Leon continues to defend this insidious intent. This behavior doesn't have anything to do with God or extraterrestrials, midgets, or holographs. This is life. Friends, your life. Our people will continue to do that which is required by law to do, and therein lies the truth of it. And yes, indeed, I do suggest that you people get the right parties into litigation so that the ones who are now paying the piper can have relief. Until a real culprit is faced and brought to the table of settlement, there is no end in view. It doesn't longer matter what was the original causative factor, save in a court of law, where disputes must be handled under the law and required by law. You who continue the wrangle have joined the dark forces, by your own description, and so be it. It is your life, your privilege. Give me even one reason Eckers should pay even $1 of George Green's bills. I can promise all of you involved here, Green had, has, and never will have any intention of paying you what he owes you. And Leon, if you helped handle the gold on the move of Green to Nevada, as you've just stated in writing, why did you not tell Ecker about it? You continue to blast Charles, Rick, everyone about it. Why did you not make it known that George held all that gold? Could you possibly be serving the wrong side? I'm not going to spend more time on that constant leaking faucet, for the world continues to turn, and it is time to speak of things far greater. Funds of all kinds will be covered when we are left alone long enough to do our work. Today I'm going to turn my attention to UFOs and the CIA. I have personally met with every head of the CIA and have spent a lot of time, especially recently, with George Bush, and more recently saw to it that he and Powell were safely put on the ground after the plane to Europe was set for a blowout, which could have taken all their lives. I don't want their lives taken for many reasons, but the more prominent one at the moment is that they have some work to do for me. Never mind what that might mean, but it means something quite important to my people. Let us speak now of old cover-ups and futile efforts to bring reason into the grasp of all of you. The New World Order has other plans, and so it goes. Quoting from the New Dawn, May, June, 96. UFOs and the CIA, Anatomy of a Cover-Up, by Reg A. Davidson. The modern age of UFO phenomena began on a July afternoon in 1947 when private pilot Kenneth Arnold reported 9 unidentified silvery, crescent-shaped objects that skimmed through the sky at an incredible rate of speed. Their motion, Arnold said, reminded him of a saucer skipping over water. A news reporter took up Arnold's description, and the phrase, flying saucers, soon became imprinted on a collective consciousness. Hatton's comment, oh, yes, indeed, there is a collective consciousness. When strange objects continued to be reported by competent witnesses, the U.S. authorities began investigating the phenomenon. The task fell under the auspices of the United States Air Force, but few were aware that the CIA took an interest in the strange phenomenon soon after the first reports of flying saucers emerged. The Air Force was actually in a state of near panic due to the wave of sightings. UFOs were reported over Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama, then to the horror of the top military brass, over the White Sands Proving Ground. Right in the middle of their atom bomb territory. General Nathan Twining, commander of the Air Materiel Command, wrote to the commanding general of the Army Air Force, stating that the phenomenon was something real, that it was not visionary or fictitious, and that the objects were disc-shaped, as large as aircraft and controlled. The press latched onto the reports, and sensationalized stories of alien invasion gripped the population. The press and the government were demanding answers. The Air Force, worried that the whole situation was getting out of hand, tried to quell public anxiety by ordering a full investigation. On December 30, 1947, Major General L.C. Craigie ordered the establishment of Project SIGN, S-I-G-N, at what became known as Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. Operating under the auspices of the Air Materiel Command's Technical Intelligence Division, Project SIGN was directed, quote, to collect, collate, evaluate, and distribute to interested government agencies and contractors all information concerning sightings and phenomena in the atmosphere which can be construed to be of concern to the national security. The project was given a 2A restricted classification security rating under a system that acknowledged 1A as the highest or most secret designation. Hatton says, "Now you know one of the reasons why my own security file is beyond the president's ability to access. It is, however, only one reason. The more important reason is because of my own status in the command. Whether you wish to believe such a thing or not, it matters not." The following year, three men from Wright-Patterson approached Dr. J. Allen Hynek, an astronomer then employed by Ohio State University in nearby Columbus. They said they needed some astronomical consultation because it was their job to find out what these flying saucer stories were all about, Hynek recalls. Hynek was hired as a consultant with the Air Force and remained in that capacity for over two decades as SIGN evolved into Projects Grudge and Blue Book, the last officially ceasing in December of 1969. According to Hynek, the Air Force had a simple but effective method to explain UFOs: dismiss all sightings as misidentified astronomical phenomena. The problem, says Hynek, was the Air Force regarded it as an intelligence matter instead of handing the investigation to an academic or university group. Therefore, any serious investigation of the new phenomena was stultified because top military brass believed it an intelligence matter, another intrigue of the emerging Cold War. However, military personnel directly involved in Project SIGN had a different view. While 96% of reports turned out to be misidentified astronomical phenomena, e.g. the planet Venus, the other 4% were not so easily discredited or explained, and a minority of military personnel took these seriously. Hatton's comment, "I wonder where you nice people think that planet Venus went to lately."
Yeah. We've been wondering about that.
It surely is missing.
From
its usual orbit, along with several other stars and planets flashing their colored lights.
Isn't it amazing?
It is.
Minority intelligence opinion then divided into the two camps, namely those who saw UFOs as evidence of new Soviet technology and those who thought they might be precursors of an invasion of extraterrestrials. Heading: Flying Saucers and the CIA. Ever since 1948, the CIA has maintained an interest in UFOs and remains tight-lipped to this very day on the subject, keeping evidence and documents on the phenomena many levels above top secret. Hatton's comment, "I think you will find it interesting that a very high-level operative has recently told Rick personally that it is not wise to use the term Hatton, for it brings down the totally insane group of intelligence focus. Well, so too does the word God, when it is correctly interpreted. Now, readers, is it not comforting to you to have me identified by your beyond top secret crowd? Go ahead and enjoy the revelation, for it is because of me that you have laws about meeting extraterrestrials, so they can lock away anyone who encounters one." A memo sent on January 29, 1952, to the CIA's Deputy Director of Intelligence, from Ralph Clark of the Office of Scientific Intelligence, OSI, states, "In the past several weeks, numerous UFOs have been sighted visually and on special UFO group radar. This office has maintained a continuing review of reputed sightings for the past 3 years, and a special group has been formed to review the sightings to date. Many researchers believe that from the very beginning, the CIA was quite certain UFOs were not just Soviet technology. In fact, as evidence accumulated pointed to the possible extraterrestrial origin of UFOs, the CIA became increasingly nervous that other U.S. government agencies might launch their own inquiries into the matter. Secrecy would be an impossibility if everyone investigated UFOs, and in a matter of time, details would leak to the media and public. In response to these concerns, the CIA began a process of maintaining a tight rein over the investigations to ensure no public inquiries would ever take place. To discredit the phenomenon, the CIA set up a panel of experts whose job was to explain away UFOs. The CIA convened on 14 February 1953 a confab that became known as the Robertson Panel after its chairman, Dr. H.P. Robertson, then director of the Weapons System Evaluation Group in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and also a CIA employee. Paren, 1A, trained by MI6, London. The sequence of events leading directly to the Robertson panel involved a series of UFO sightings over the nation's capital in the summer of 1952. Sightings confirmed by military personnel, including radar operators and scrambled interceptor pilots, and which themselves resulted in the largest post-World War II military press conference to that date. At the press conference itself, the repeated radar sightings were put down to temperature inversions, and the attending Air Force officers made no mention of the scrambled jet fighters. Besides the esteemed Dr. Robertson, the panel also included as members physicist Dr. Luis Alvarez, later a Nobel laureate, Dr. Samuel Goldsmith, another physicist from Brookhaven National Labs, who was an associate of Einstein's and had discovered electron spin, a former University of Chicago astronomer and then deputy director of the Johns Hopkins Operations Research Office, Dr. Thornton Page. And finally, Dr. Lloyd Berkner, yet another physicist and one of Brookhaven's directors. The panel was addressed by a variety of CIA and Air Force personnel who reviewed some 20 of the better UFO cases and showed two film strips of alleged flying saucers, one of which purportedly portrayed objects characterized as self-luminous.